I didn't really know what to do. So I did what most Christians do with difficult struggles. I tried to press it down and step on it and pretend that it wasn't there.
Well, that was Jeff Johnston. He was talking about his struggles with same-sex attraction, and he is here this week to talk to us about healthy masculinity, how guys can cultivate it, and how girls can recognize it. Well, hey, everyone. This is Lisa Anderson with The Boundless Show. Great to have you here today with us. This is our Valentine's Day episode, and I know it's only, if you're listening to it on the day it comes out, it's only February 8th, but you have to look forward to Valentine's Day because, you know, next Thursday we'll be past it. So there you have it. So happy Valentine's Day. You know, folks, that I love Valentine's Day. It is not Singles Awareness Day. Sad. Let's take it back, peeps. So we're all okay with it, right? Right. Later on in the show, our inbox, we have a listener who is stuck in a cycle of sleeping with her ex-boyfriend, even though he is now engaged to someone else. Okay, thank you for writing in. We have one of our licensed counselors who's going to hopefully share some advice related to that, because we definitely want to make sure that you have some wisdom in this situation. All right, but here we are for our roundtable, and we have got married people in the room today. We once in a while let them out of their cages and allow them to speak here at the Boundless Show. So we have Brian Krause. Hey, Brian.
Hello, hello.
You have been married, what, 15 years?
Yep.
To your wife you met in college?
Yep, met her in college.
That is so precious.
Yeah. Okay. To have two wonderful little girls.
15 years, but he looks like he's about 24, so it's a little bit deceiving.
Oh, thank
you. He's just such a little youngster.
It's the water.
Then we have Greg Smalley, also a youngster.
No. Very young. I'm almost 50 young.
And married, what, 26?
26 years.
Okay. Did you ever do that big 25th trip you were supposed to be taking your wife on?
Where it was absolutely disastrous.
Okay.
So that could be an entire show.
That may be
what happened. It was an excellent, we had a great time celebrating.
Okay. Very fun. The big quarter century. And then Diane Angolia is here. Hey, Diane.
Hey, she didn't say the old one.
Not the old one. Now, occasionally we've let you and your hubster, Roger, be on the show together, but you're just going to be sharing the insight today.
I am.
On behalf of both of you.
Thank you. And 40 years.
40 years. Oh, my word. And not only, both of you, Greg and Diane, are known. You do a lot of counseling of younger couples heading into marriage and ones who are married, kind of showing them the ropes. So that is a little bit of what we want to talk about today, because we're going to actually talk about, I think there's this assumption that people get married and then they just start working on their marriages. And you're just hopeful that you're going to shore things up, maybe deficiencies, or you'll figure out, or people are going to change and that whole thing. But I think it's pretty obvious, as borne out by research and just couples in particular in their own stories, that really how you dating well and knowing the things to look for, knowing the questions to ask, knowing the experiences to have is going to play into how successful your marriage is down the road. Not that it's going to be easy, not that it's going to be, pain-free or anything like that, but definitely some principles that I think we can learn from. So kudos to you being selected for this roundtable, because it means that we actually think you might have relatively successful marriages.
Or we were the only ones left that you had asked.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be, we'll see. We'll see as I pry things out of you if we really feel you're up to the task. But no, it'll be fun. So let's start out. I want each of you just to kind of share, kind of encapsulate a story of how you guys met your spouses. And just, was this something, I mean, did dating them or finding them hit you like the flu, or were you kind of like going out after them? Did you kind of see them in your circles of acquaintance? What did it look like to actually single them out and say, I think this is someone that I want to date?
Yeah, I'll start. Like you said, my wife and I met in college, and we actually met in a bowling alley of all places. And it was her roommate and I were in a class together, and her roommate just invited her to come bowling. So we were at a Christian college, and there was time between our class and chapel. And I saw her, and I'd seen her around on campus. And maybe I'll spill the beans here, Lisa, on this one. You probably know where this is going, and you may have shared this with your boundless listeners.
All manner of weirdness.
I actually walked over to her, and not really introducing myself, but she was wearing a candy necklace, and I grabbed the candy necklace, pulled it off her neck a little bit, and started eating some of the candy off her candy necklace. And that's...
We'd call that throwing a gutter ball in the bowling world.
But I figured then I might as well start at the bottom and work my way up. So, you know, she thought I was kind of crazy, but I guess I redeemed myself somehow.
I guess so. Okay. There you have it. Bowling alley. We're not even going to get into how you managed to fit in bowling before chapel, but when clearly you should have been... praying or something, but
it's a spiritual gift, really.
Yes. Well,
Greg, I know you had a kind of college connection as well.
We met also at college our sophomore year, Grand Canyon University in Phoenix, Arizona. My wife was a total stranger, had never met her, ended up in a Old Testament theology class, sitting in the back, sitting in front of this stranger. I fell sound asleep. I don't know if we were in Leviticus at the time. I don't know what was going on. But I'm sound asleep. The next thing I know, this girl behind me grabs my arm, shakes me awake, and then tells me that the professor called on me to pray. And so being the trusting person that I am, because why would a stranger make this up? I stood up from the back of this class and started to pray out loud. And as everybody laughed and I was confused, and the professor said, hey, let me finish lecturing next time before you try to close this in prayers. I was humiliated. I just remember sitting there thinking, man, the nerve that it would take to play that kind of a cruel joke on someone. So impressed me that I really do remember thinking, now that's the girl I'm going to marry someday. So I'm not saying that that's actually the best way to determine if you should marry someone by their willingness to play practical jokes on you.
Right.
But it worked for us.
Or wearing a candy necklace.
Yeah. Nor should you be falling asleep in theology classes, but whatever.
I was praying.
We somehow redeemed.
My prayer language, the snoring.
Yeah. Redeem the moment. So, okay, Diane, how about you?
Well, we met at a Bible study, but my girlfriend was really interested in Roger. And I loved Marianne more than I knew some guy, even though he was cute. So when he would come in, I'd go out because Marianne was really interested in him. So I just ignored him and didn't really care. And then we just heard that he liked me, but I was dating other people. So, and as I've told my story before, he dated me 5 years, but I only dated him 2. So,
and that's even before social media. He couldn't even stalk you online form some kind of fake relationship with you.
And he would call for a date and I'd say, how about a rain check? I've got 2 weeks from Saturday. How about that?
Wow.
And he would say, okay. And all of his family's like, you're crazy, you know, dumper. And he's like, I love her. And I'm like, oh, man, I've heard those words before.
Who is this guy?
Yeah. So, yeah. So it took him 5 years.
Okay. So clearly these stories speak to the different paces within relationships. I mean, Brian, you're clearly just going too fast to the point of already eating things off of someone's neck.
Well, I had just come out of a previous relationship maybe a month earlier.
That makes it better.
Right? And I was like, okay. I didn't care. I was just, whatever.
You didn't care.
I didn't care. I'm like, boy, and candy necklace.
I feel loved now.
Why else do you wear a candy necklace?
So why, I mean, what did you know kind of in, not necessarily in that moment, but maybe in, did you ask her out right then? How would this have ended up being different than that previous relationship? What was the difference?
Well, here's a big difference. She was walking back to her dorm and it was raining out and I lived off campus. So as I drove past, I saw her and I said, hey, you want a ride back to your dorm? And as we were in the truck talking, I said, what are you doing next? She's like, well, I was going to head to the mall to go get a cell phone. And I said, oh, I worked at an electronics store, so I know a little bit about cell phones and stuff like that. I said, do you want me to tag along? Mm-hmm. She said, sure. So we go to the mall and guess what? I didn't even have to ask for her cell phone. I chose her cell phone number. I didn't have to ask for it. And in fact, she's
the old, I work in an electronics store.
It happened to include his birthday numbers in it. But.
It worked.
That's funny. So you did get her number.
I did.
That's
good.
Okay.
You really worked at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And Greg, I don't think it wasn't just immediate sparks for you guys. You had a big lag in between when things actually started happening, right?
We did. For me, it really, what, as I look back, what made a big difference is the people in my support group. So that my parents, my family, siblings, close friends, everyone loved Erin, knew her. She worked for my mom, actually. And this is all before we were friends, before we dated. And they put so much pressure on me to take her out, to get serious, that at some point as we were dating, I had to have sort of the talk to just that we just need to slow down. Like everybody's putting so much pressure on me that I thought, man, I'm the one that has to live with her for the rest of my life. I need to make sure that this is really who I want to spend my life with. And she interpreted that as I broke up with her. Mm-hmm. And so quickly found out she was dating someone else. So but for me, it was really just the those who knew me best and cared about me really, really thought that she was the right person for me. And that spoke a lot. But then I ultimately had to know that that was for me and not just to please them or whatever. Yeah. So that was a big factor in understanding was Aaron the one for me?
Yeah, and it really speaks to the value of having other people in your sphere who can put objective eyes on a relationship. Because I think a lot of times we're just like, they're so amazing. If you just knew them the way I know them, and then we're like, they seem to be kind of a jerk. Maybe my girlfriend's told me that one time, but let's not get into that story. Okay, Diane, so you're out there playing the field.
I am.
You're dating just every weekend. Can't even keep them all straight.
Oh, I kept them straight. she
had her notebook.
She had a daily planner.
Okay, so how did Roger manage to push through?
It's interesting. It was perseverance, really. Poor guy. But the words "I love you" came to mean nothing to me. And I was asked to be married 7 times. Roger was the 7th, so lucky 7. I know. So it's like, who? Wow.
Let's assure the women out there that this is atypical.
This is so weird.
So women have just started weeping on the other side of the
room. I've known Dan a long time. I did not know that about
you.
It's
just weird. Wow. It was like one of those truly ring by spring, by May, by June, by August. It was so ridiculous.
Wow.
And it just got to the point where I just thought, guys are just stupid. I'm going to be a nun. I am over this. I am so over this.
Helps and to be Italian when
does.
You want to be a nun.
It's so okay. True.
Yeah. Or Maria von Trapp.
Lots of connections.
So it was rough on Raj because he really had to prove love. And he never said those words. And I never really understood unconditional love because there was always a condition attached to all these different guys that were coming in my life. And Roger never asked for anything back from me. And at one point I said, I don't love you like you love me. And his response was, I know, just let me love you. I said, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And he goes, just let me love you, and you do not have to return it. And I think that was like the turning point for me to go, that's what love is. It's unconditional. Okay. All right. Let's see how this goes.
Wow. Okay. So, you know, we know that a lot of dating, if you just read articles out there and all the nonsense that's on social media and beyond, you know, you would assume that it's all about pizza dates and having fun and looking into each other's eyes and stuff. But I would say that for a successful marriage to be planted, you guys probably had to figure out a few key things while you were dating and get serious about a few things that you knew were foundational to saying this thing has the chance to go the distance. What are the biggest takeaways that you had while dating that maybe were even unexpected, like things that you knew, either you knew you had to settle them or get answers to these, or you had to work through something, or just what ended up being kind of those landmark things that helped you move into marriage with confidence?
I think for us, it was just, we enjoyed spending time together. It didn't matter what it was. You know, we could be out hiking, rollerblading, you know, going to the grocery store. It didn't matter. We just enjoyed each other's company. And again, that's what really did it for us, was just kind of that spending time with each other.
Yeah.
That and candy necklaces.
Yeah, well,
it's funny you say that, Brian, though, because I think there are so many people who date nowadays who are just in full-on drama fests. They're fighting, they're breaking up, it's all kinds of crazy, they don't share the same values, but they think that somehow, if they just try hard enough, they're going to make this work. And it's kind of like, I always tell people, you know, it should, I think, be a little easier than this. Not that it's going to be easy, but you're not going to want to take out restraining orders on one another.
It should, but like Diane was saying, you know, I too had to fight for Marty when over Christmas break, I had a couple of days off and she was at home and her house was like 5 hours away. And I decided, hey, I want to go see her because I missed her. So I decided to drive the 5 hours to get to her house. Come to her house, find out that, and we weren't officially dating yet, but there was some roses on the mantle from another boy that liked her.
Mm-hmm.
So
Probably one of Diane's exes.
Probably.
But, you know, you think about that, and what really won out is that, you know, I was the one putting forth the effort, you know, to mm-hmm. go see her, to go spend time with her. Mm-hmm. And the other guy was just shelling out money for roses that died.
They do. Yeah,
that's good. Mm-hmm. All right. How about you, Greg?
I think one of the things that's important to notice as you're dating is, how does this person handle your heart when there are problems? So it's either maybe we had an argument or something's going on, or you're really stressed. Something's happening, and how does this person handle you? Is there room in the relationship for both people? You know, when Aaron and I went through just some challenges, or there were things in our life that were hard that we were facing, she had a way in which she handled my heart in such a great way. Just listened, care, empathized. I mean, did those kinds of things versus, you know, well, that's a stupid way to feel, or I'm just going to solve how you're feeling. So I think it's important just to pay attention. How does this person really handle you when you struggle, when you go through some hard times? That's going to tell you a lot. Mm-hmm.
I think it goes back to that unconditional love, that they care enough about you to set themselves aside. Mm-hmm. And I've always said he loves me far more than I love him because I just see how selfless he is in the relationship. And it's humbling because you want then to give back because you see that there really isn't any strings attached to what it is that he does for you. Mm-hmm. And I needed to see that. That was really important to me, especially coming from a home where there was always an anchor attached to every gift or to every compliment. There was something that they wanted back. Mm-hmm. So to have that unconditional love, I think that's why I was suspicious and why it took me 5 years to realize what a great guy this was, because he had to prove himself over and over.
Yeah, that's a good example. Would you guys say, I mean, Diane, you just gave a great example of something, you know, kind of a quality that you saw in him. What are any other qualities you saw that made you know, I can actually move forward with this person? Like, this is something that is real. Like, you, I think it's so easy in our culture today to say, you know, everyone's doing quizzes on chemistry and compatibility, and do you line up in all these areas, or else they date for like 12 years hoping to find out every single thing about that person to get check off all the right boxes. But, you know, you guys would probably, I think biblically, there are very foundational things that need to be in place, you know, before, and then the rest of the marriage is an exploration of that person. You're going to find out a lot about them after the fact. But what are those things that you knew, because they have this, I know that we have a chance at success here?
One of the things I loved about Roger is he was pursuing looking for a mentor, and that wasn't something I'd asked of him to do, because I certainly did want a guy that was willing to be accountable to someone. And he did find someone, a doctor, to be his mentor, who is eventually our pastor as well. But his heart for wanting to know more about God, but also wanting to know how he can serve better. And so by having someone that he was accountable to and was meeting with on a regular basis showed me his heart for God, and knowing that he really loved the Lord and wanted to grow in that relationship, knowing that any other relationship is going to hinge on that first. Yeah. So I love to watch him grow in the Lord. That made me go, this is not just this fake, you know, he's so heavenly bound, he's no earthly good. But it was reality. It was like feet on the ground.
Yeah.
How
and he did it
I?
For him, not for you, not to
right.
impress you.
Right.
Yeah. That's great.
I think for me, it was understanding that there is no such thing as a soulmate, that God has given us free will to choose. And I remember a mentor of mine, as I was asking him just about Aaron and where we were in our relationship, how do you know if this is the right person? And he just said, man, when you think of 50 years down the road, what does it feel like when you imagine Aaron not being there with you? And I think for me, that was the moment that I really realized that I want to spend my life with Aaron, because I hated that thought. Mm-hmm. Like you can, I mean, let's be honest. There's a lot of great people out there. You can build a wonderful life with a lot of people. God gives you that choice to walk within his will around that. It's you have to determine, does this person have those qualities and that you want to be with them for the rest of your life. You know, mm-hmm. Aaron and I enjoyed one another. We had a lot of fun. We laughed. We both were believers. We were pursuing Christ. Mm-hmm. You know, we complemented one another in our personalities. I mean, those are the kinds of things that as you're thinking, boy, what when I'm rocking on the rocking chair, you know, at 75, what would it be like if Aaron wasn't next to me? Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to not have her there. I wanted her there. Yeah. And that was kind of how I knew that she was the one I wanted to spend my life with.
And yet you two are very different people, like personality-wise.
We
and,
are. And go, yeah. I mean, we compliment. I mean, she's a total extrovert. I'm an introvert. But I mean, there's a way in which those things can complement each other. Now, yeah. Our first years of marriage, those turned into irritations and frustrations. we had conflict around this stuff. But that's the stuff that makes our relationship beautiful. That's the spice.
Mm-hmm. I love talking to Erin. She's always like, "So I'm inviting these 50 people over," and Lord. Greg's just like flatlining. And
yeah, I just pretend I'm asleep or fake a heart attack to get out of the party. Whatever I need to do.
Hey, call me next.
He
time.
Does that. Yeah.
We'll go bowling.
Yes, we'll go bowling.
Yeah. Okay, Diane.
Well, I was going to piggyback on what he said, that the question I asked myself each time these guys would ask me, you know, "Will you marry me?" And my thought was, don't laugh at me, it wasn't that funny
that
at
thought.
The time. I would say, is this someone that I could live with? And my answer might be yes. And then the second question was, is this someone I don't think I could live without? Mm-hmm. And that was where the first time when it came to Roger, when I asked that question, and my answer was, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe. And that was the first time I had paused to say, I don't know, maybe, because all the other ones I'm like, yes, I could live with you, but can I live without you? Oh, yeah.
I don't want to.
Yeah, I
can
live without you.
Yeah.
You know, and also on top of that, too, kind of your family background as well. You know, additionally, what Diane was saying, what Greg is saying, both Marty and my parents they're all still together. They've been married, I think, 45 years, and her parents are going on 40 years. My parents are 45 years. So they laid a good foundation as well for, you know, what we could look for. And then also we knew if we were struggling with something, we could always go back to our parents and they could, you know, come together as a couple and help us through that. I think that's what really helped.
Yeah,
for us too.
And that's good, because for someone that doesn't have that, they mm-hmm. know that they need to go after that in their church or in their circle of acquaintance. Who has a great marriage that you would like to emulate? What does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
You guys, these are great thoughts. Thank you so much for sharing from, I like to say, you know, from the other side of the aisle. for those who are looking ahead to being married someday. So great wisdom, y'all.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.